This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production. The Rated R Wrestling Podcast 313 with the Southwest Texans starts right now.
Hello?
Time and thank you for your opportunity of being on the show, and thank you for accepting my invitation. Hello?
Hey, Southwest. He's not on yet. We have him in the screening room.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, like I said, this man's been a legend since the 1980s. He's going to talk wrestling. He's going to talk his legendary path through the wrestling business and everything that he's been through. So, ladies and gentlemen, Bill Burns, thank you for being on, like I said earlier.
Am I on now?
Yes, sir. You're on now.
There we go. Oh, all good then. Well, nice to be here, and thank you. And I'll be pleased to discuss whatever you want to talk about.
Okay. Well, yeah, like I said, you've been a legend in this business since the 1980s. You're a current NWA producer. You started in the 80s. How did you start in the TV wrestling business?
Well, I mean, the start always is I think if you really have a passion for the business, and I do, I've always wanted the business to continue, and I've been a small part of that. But I grew up watching it in Florida, where Eddie Graham promoted. And then, weirdly, I ended up working years later with at least three people he trained. Well, actually four, because he trained Dusty, he trained Billy Dundee, he trained Jerry Jarrett, and he trained Dutch Mantel. And all those people at various times booked for him. So that's why I grew up watching wrestling. So I was taught well. It was put over as a legitimate sport. It was real. And to a great extent, it came off that way to the point where people got stabbed and weird good stuff happened, and they drew great crowds. I saw tremendous
right.
characters like the great Malenko, and that's, you know, where Dusty got his start, really, you know, where he took off, was down there. But, you know, I grew up watching Dory Funk Jr., Jack Briscoe, classic stuff. Eddie Graham was tremendous. And they were a smart promotion. They told stories, and when they did blood, it meant something. You know, it was great Malenko and Eddie Graham in a Russian chain match. So anyway, I got into TV through my family, which I've been in TV my whole life. I was a half-assed child star on educational TV shows for a long time. And then I was selling those for my dad, and then I quit my family company, which is always a good thing to do at Christmas. And I... But I ended up going to a convention because, you know, I had to finish up. It's like in wrestling, you got to finish up. So I went in to do that, and I happened to meet a guy where there was an industry publication did an article about dads and sons in the business. Of course, they didn't know I had just resigned. But anyway, so, you know, but it was a great little story. And this other guy, Rich Colbert, who, by the way, backstory, is the original keyboard player for a classic rock and roll band out of New York called Mink DeVille. You look it up if you don't know who they are.
Right.
Really good.
Yeah.
So spin forward. We knock into each other, never met, blah, blah, blah. Hey, I know who you are. I know who you are. We just read about each other. Yeah, right. And then, long short, I got hired. I moved on. The company hired on went out of business, but it led to me getting a lot of other stuff, setting up my own company. So I went out selling a bunch of stuff. I ended up being an officer for 3 or 4 different companies at the same time. A sports company called World Sports that I was doing. Then I was doing another company, Lytton Syndications, that's still in business, and I was an officer for them. And a great entertainment company was an officer for them. And then I was doing shit on my own. And my own included, I got in touch with some guys, and the first one was a guy named David Woods, young guy, who owned 2 TV stations. Well, actually, his dad did, but he had inherited them. So he had TV stations in Alabama. And he was a wrestling fan, and he and I talked about wrestling. And all of a sudden, Continental Wrestling was going to get sold again by the Fuller family. He ends up buying it, and after he bought it, he found out he had bought nothing, of course. But now he had the obligation to do a TV show, and Eddie Gilbert was down there just before he passed. But anyway, David got with me, and I tried to get him greater distribution for his show. And since I was doing it for him, I decided I'd call a bunch of other people. So I called Mike Graham down in Florida, and various other folks. And I put together 4 or 5 TV shows Monday through Friday, I think it was at 11, on what was called the Prime Sports Networks, which would now be called Fox Sports. What I was doing. And in that, I had met Jerry Jarrett, and then in 1993, I don't know where, Jerry called me and wanted me to come in and get TV in towns for him so his son could be a promoter.
Right, Jeff Jarrett, right. And He didn't want to do that.
But I got the towns. So now we were sort of screwed because we had signed this contract. Well, sort of. It was just a minimal contract. But, I mean, Jerry, I said, Jerry, you're going to hate me if you pay me what you have to pay me for what your son now doesn't want to do. You know, because if you pay,
right.
you know, based on the deal, it assumed that the kid was going to do it at the time. But he wanted to go be a star, go figure. Jerry said, well, I said, I don't mind just, you know, figuring something out. And he said, well, let's do this. Why don't you take the USWA TV show around when you're doing all the other shit and see if you can get it on TV more? We did, and we got it up to 50% of the country. Well, at that point, and it was pretty quick, and Jerry got to WWE, and he had said he'd get me paid. So all of a sudden, next thing I know, WWE's contacted me saying that we're going to sublet your show. USWA,
right?
Okay, and we're going to pay you, me, Bill, and you'll come in as a consultant and work with our syndication team, and here's some money. And I called Jerry and said, hey, I got called by the office, and they're going to put me under contract for a show I don't own. And he said, don't worry about it, just do it. So from that moment on, I was technically in charge of a show I didn't produce and didn't own. But Memphis was always the weirdest promotion because actually the show was produced by the TV station, not by Jerry.
Exactly.
Jerry didn't pay a dime. Lawler didn't pay a dime, neither Jerry. It was done by WMC, and they paid a lot of money. The company made around $300,000 a year if it did nothing but show up and do the TV.
Wow. Right, exactly.
That was the highest-rated show. It was higher rated than any news at the time. The most on every station in the country, the shows that were getting the highest ratings were the evening news, except in Memphis, where the highest-rated show was on Saturday morning.
Okay.
And that was wrestling.
Okay, yeah.
So that's where we started, and then all of a sudden things changed. Jerry sold out. The other Jerry got into business with decent people, then bad people, and it all got screwed up. And anyway, so all of a sudden I went from just helping with TV to being on camera, and I hosted the last live show, and I'm still syndicating the show because I work for WWE at the same time. Although in between, Jerry Jarrett went to WCW and consulted to Eric Bischoff, so I went to WCW and worked with Rob Gardner there in their syndication division, fixing some problems they had. So I was there for a year in between WWE gigs. But anyway, time passed. Memphis was happening anyway. And finally in 1997, it goes out of business. Right? The people had bought it, put it out of business in 6 months. They did a great job. And, you know, with all good people, go figure. So, but all of a sudden, I still had to give a TV show to somebody, right? Because that's my deal. That's why I'm getting paid. So that's when I had met Bert Prentice initially because Jerry wanted me to put him out of business in Nashville. So that's how I first met him. And then after that, we worked together at the tail end of the terrible USWA in 96 and 97. Jerry said, get in touch with Bert and see if you can do something, and we did, and we put together Music City Wrestling, which then became NWA Worldwide when I joined the NWA in 1998 when Howard Brody came and said, hey, will you join? And we still had that same TV. So my slide through wrestling from the 80s through the 90s into the 2000s was all driven by the fact that at the time, the TV, the way we see it now, with 9 million channels and the internet, with everything you want to watch, whatever you want to watch it, that didn't exist.
Okay.
That
exactly.
wasn't around
yeah, right.
back
yeah.
then. So me being able to have a TV show eventually all over the world, which I did, Wildside ended up being international. And this was all pre-real internet. There was internet, but it was half-assed. You know,
right.
It was
a
website.
Really
it was, you know, it was it was just bare-bones shit. Nobody had
dialogue.
A computer, and if you did, it was expensive as crap. So...
And
anyway,
and
there was no real cable, there was no real satellite, and cable was at 50% of the country or less. So that's the industry I got my reputation in, because I knew how to get stuff on that, the old kind of TV. You know, now a monkey can get something on TV, it's easy. You know, you go to somebody that wants to put it on TV, they have a channel, they tell you they'll do the best they can, and off you go. It's not that hard now. It used to be hard, you had to, you know, actually work.
Right. You have to work to do it. Right.
Now you have to figure out how to make
right.
money. You can get on TV easily. Any monkey can. I'm still on TV with stuff I produce. I mean, you know, because I'm on, you know, Fight TV. That's sort of TV.
Okay.
But anyway, with Bert, blah, blah, blah. And then I got tired of going over the mountain from Atlanta to be a heel on Bert's show, which is what I'd been doing. And I'd been promoting in Atlanta too, trying to do. One or two, maybe 3 days a week, because I'm used to running a circuit, and it's not really working because you just can't do that. You know, we're right now in 1998, 1999, and I was calling it NWA Georgia, and that's when a couple of guys that were running in another building, Steve Martin and Ray Rawls, came to me, and they had something going called NCW. They were doing okay in a little building. They told me about they have advertisers, blah, 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 showed me some stuff. And, you know, I eventually went there. We did business, and eventually it morphed into what became NWA Wildside, and that's sort of where I got a reputation beyond just being TV boy, except it was still TV because it was still going all over the United States and all over the world throughout the run till 2005. And by then, the industry had changed.
Yeah, the industry has changed a lot since then. Also, I mean, that and talking about NWA and then, you know, you're still working with them, I mean, NWA has still that nostalgia feel with the studio feeling and then with today's kind of culture into it. But, I mean, I love – and I watch NWA Power, and I love what you guys are doing over there. And, like, no doubt, like a few weeks ago, me and my brother Martez on his show, Wrestle Talk with the D, had Ziggy Dice on there, man. He's a great person. He was just a great guest to be around.
No, Ziggy's great. I'm getting to like his character, and at the same time, I can understand why it's working. But I'm not
right.
A fan. It's one of those where sometimes you can see why the character's going to work, but you're not a fan. Does that make sense?
And
that's where I've been with him, but I've watched how hard he's been working, and he was doing too much at first, which was annoying me. But then he tapered it down, and he found his role within what we were doing there, without it being beat into him, which means that okay, then he's got some real opportunity, because the thing about the NWA and the way Billy Corgan's doing it with Dave Lagana is Billy and David do have a specific idea, but they're loosey-goosey. They have a direction.
Yeah.
They have, in essence, what they know they want, but they're also willing to play as you go through the water there. They're not going to go way off the road and not figure their way back, which is what some bookers do. You know, Dusty used to do
right.
that. Dusty always had the greatest destinations, and then he'd get sidetracked and have to get back to them. You know, it's like, oh, crap, that's right. I've got a cage match coming up. Well, hang on.
Got it together.
But the booking is, I think, well done. I was skeptical going in just because, yeah, I'm old. I'm skeptical about everything. You know, I've worked with Dave Marquez for years. I'm always skeptical, and yet David's delivered. You know, so what's my point?
There you go.
You know. If you keep kicking the shit out the door, that's pretty much it. And David has kicked the stuff out the door. I've kicked the stuff out the door. In wrestling, what I learned early on is I had limited skills. I was not a good promoter. I don't have the patience. I can't work a town. I can't stand running the physical aspects of a show because it's that's going to be the hardest part of bringing independent wrestling back in our current environment. Is that it's a very tactile business. The people want to be near you, you know, and I mean
right.
as a promoter. And if you're doing it right on the indie level, you're with your people, you know.
Exactly.
And you've got a team, and you're, you know, there's no 6 feet apart hugs. It just, you know, so that's going to be the hardest part of bringing back the emotion of the underbelly of wrestling that breeds the big end of the product. Because you were going
right.
to need, no matter how many companies throw stuff at the wall, and right now only one is reaching a real large audience. The others are doing
yeah.
okay.
Yeah. That's,
based on their
that's
investment, some are doing well as a business. Others may build a business, just don't know how they're going to get there. You know, AEW right now has, 700,000 to they've gone over a million.
Yeah.
Their average right now audience is probably around 750,000, give or take. And they're really competing with WWE's third brand. Everything's down. But they're competing within 100,000 viewers. So it's not like it's a fight, really, for the big company. And people, you know, every time it's reported the ratings are down, well, yeah, okay, firm grasp of the obvious. You take some of the sizzle out of it. And part of the reason people watch is gone, and now you have to let the audience decide what they want to come back to. So, but the fact is, WWE is still getting over, 2 million or more on average for both of their shows, or each of their shows. Yeah, it's still a substantial audience, and they're still servicing their networks well. You know, AEW is the one that's got, like, a relatively small audience, yet it's fortunately got a deep-pocketed investor.
Yeah,
it's a tough time. That's why being with NWA, I hope we get going. Because honestly, while there's no way to totally social distance, I maintain you can run a closed environment kind of show if it's small enough and we figure the testing aspects out. You know what I'm saying? So NWA, which is, you know, the environment is that small building. You know, and if we have to separate every other seed, it's still going to look good, right?
Most
so there's still going to be, I think there's still going to be a way to get back to that. And that's, I think NWA is in a better position to bring an audience back to their product. Ring of Honor is in the second best with Impact because they're already committed to small buildings. AEW and WWE are screwed because they're committed to large buildings as part of their business plan. Fortunately, the other companies hadn't gotten there yet. So coming back is going to be from the bottom up, not from the top down. Top down just keeping us around.
Yeah, that's most definitely because this coronavirus turned the whole, well, not just the wrestling business, but everybody's business inside out and upside down. And I watch the wrestling product still, but like I heard that Raw actually this week did below 175 million. They didn't even hit two hundred million.
No, they were just below 2 million. Yeah, no, it's not like it's a crisis. They have a network they have to serve. Also, look at it this way. Normally, what would be going on is they'd be going to this town. All the talent would be flying to this town, right? They'd be renting the building. They'd be putting on this big business. Now they have other businesses going, merchandise, blah, blah, blah. They've been trying to make money off the live event. Okay, erase all that. The economics now are totally different on the production side because right now they're in a closed set environment. They already pay the talent. They have no out-of-pocket. The travel is minimal because half the talent lives down there now. So that's the other difference, which is, yes, the delivery on the back end is not as good, but there's also lower expense from a WWE standpoint on the front end. And for the network standpoint, nothing is drawing. That's why on the weekend all the networkers are throwing up. Remember that game we played 3 years ago, right? You know, for football.
Right.
It's like, hey, remember that Super Bowl? Wasn't that fun?
This is going to be crazy. Like, and now in history, you're going to be able to say we had empty arena matches and empty arena football games and empty arena basketball games. That's just the crazy thing that's going
to Well, I think the one thing the one thing that needs to be said, and really people aren't talking about it, it's a positive, which I always think lean to the positive. We're trying to build this business, not kill it. But the positive is, what sport has stayed in business? What entertainment form, and I mean, other than news, that sort of had to, what else has maintained a front end? Even the entertainment shows, they're all being done from home. They're all being done remotely. Piece here, piece there. Nobody but wrestling, literally no one that I can think of. Even golf isn't happening. And, that one I never figured out. If you can't figure out social separation on a golf course, we are totally, totally doomed. We might as well just pack it up. The big wave's coming in now.
Definitely. Might as well take your ball and go home.
Yeah, the day we canceled things like golf, it's like, just say no crowd. If you can't social distance on a golf course, what the hell?
you got a big old space, you got a big old yard, there's no way. Definitely, there's no way.
But again, wrestling, if you really think of it, and I challenge you, go think, what sport has continued that isn't totally internet-driven? You know, I'm sure there's some kind of sport that's competing, like competitive frickin' video games or something, right?
Yeah.
That's probably still front end.
There was a concert that they put on Channel 7. Concert for everybody to watch. Stuff like that. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, but what is really trying to deliver a product that is still current and timely and happening now, and the only industry that's doing it right now is professional wrestling. So, you know.
Yeah, and then a lot of people a lot of people on social media were actually complaining about WrestleMania being an empty arena, thing. But what my thing is even without the crowd, the wrestlers are actually doing their job, and it's actually in the title of the show. It's called WrestleMania. The wrestlers are actually wrestling, and doing their job and doing it for the people. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people complain about it, but like you said, who else is doing it for them?
And it's going to be difficult to get back. The hardest thing that's going to be for all of us, obviously on the comeback trail, as we reestablish the ability to go see things, is either we're going to be waiting until we know how to inoculate, literally, or we're going to be trying to limit audience in large environments, which defeats the purpose. You know, if
right.
you have to separate people into, you know, think about it, you know, every 6 feet all the way around, all the way through an arena.
Right, yeah, that's just going to be...
What have you accomplished at that point, you know, unless the ticket's going to have to be at a premium for it to make sense, or you're just struggling, or you're going to get to the point where they're going to go, okay, we're going to green screen this whole freaking building, and we're just going to superimpose a crowd. You know,
right.
WWE has always been blamed for piping in applause, right? You know, because every
yeah.
once in a while they'll enhance something, they'll sweeten
yeah.
it on the feed.
Yeah.
Well, heck, we'll just
definitely.
Put a crowd out there. I mean, heck, look at the stuff they do in the freaking Avengers movies. If you know, they can do you can do anything right now with CDG. So, just throw some stuff up there.
Yeah, throw some graphics in there.
We can have crowds up there. You can actually probably find a way, it'll probably cost a bucket load of money, where you have all these people to buy tickets, they sit at home, they have a camera on their face, and then you superimpose their face onto a seat
that's
out
yeah.
in a crowd, and you have this whole digital audience interacting.
Yeah.
And that would take
that would be
just a ton of bandwidth.
Crazy.
That's why.
Yeah, people would actually pay for that, and that's the crazy thing.
Well, honestly,
something
like that is probably going to happen. You know, that kind
no.
of virtual way of doing a concert where people, you know, it's already happening for free. I think that entertainers are going to find a way. It's going to be like individual pay-per-view. I'll give you a code to my
right.
Zoom.
yeah, most definitely like the Zoom thing. I understand what you're saying about that, and
Honestly, performers are going to have to find a way to reach their audience, and eventually it's going to be delivered by the Internet. It's just how much load the Internet's going to be able to take.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing because, I mean, like there's a lot of system overloads, not just for that. Like, you know, you're talking about that. That's going to be a lot of system overload because there's a lot of people that are going to watch it.
Yep. Yes, and I'm not sure we really know how much we can deliver to our systems right now. So it's going to be interesting. But good news, gas prices are down. So.
Well, yeah, for now, wait until everything goes back to normal. We're going to go back to $5 a gallon, and that's when they're, man.
If there were shows going on, I'll pay for the gas. It'll be fine. It'll be good. I'd like to get back to shows. Yeah. We did one empty arena show in Cornelia for Anarchy that we put up on the YouTube. And it went really well. It was good. But that was the last thing I've been able to do, and that was over a month ago. So that's, you know, I got to fake bleed. I was head wound Harry. I had this like gigantic wound in the back of my head.
Okay. Yeah.
But not really.
But,
I'm just
right. There you go. But I was going to ask you, you were talking about the independent wrestling earlier. What do you think about independent wrestling? Do you actually enjoy independent wrestling? I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody does because that's where all the, you know, main roster and main wrestlers come from. But like Allison Kay, you know, she came straight out of Detroit, you know, and Rhino, you know, there's people like that. But I mean, they come from the indie scenes. What do you think about independent wrestling?
There's always good. There's always bad. Is the overall answer from a perspective as what I've wanted to happen in wrestling. I learned a long time ago, like I said, I wasn't a good promoter. I learned that. I knew that I could create a TV product, and more importantly, I could teach other people how to utilize that product as a performer. You know, I'm not going to
okay.
teach somebody to lock up. Whether I can do that or not doesn't matter. It's not my job. But what I can teach somebody is how do you get what you're trying to do going to get over? And if it is, what do we have to do to get that over? How do you develop a character? And more importantly, how do you work to a TV audience, not just a live audience? That has honestly been the greatest challenge of our modern reality. And the guys that have done the best jobs have honestly been the people that were brought up primarily working to a camera wherever they work. And there aren't that many systems that do that. Ohio Valley does that and has for years. I got them into TV at the very beginning with Danny Davis back in, God knows, early 90s.
2000.
Came in before. But that's been the business I decided I needed to be in. Was I started in TV, I had a TV show, I had a distribution, and then I realized, okay, I'm not a promoter. If I can find a place, so that's where, you know, I did the promoting. I did out of one building all the time, and eventually we were able to get out because we did the development for WCW for a while and stuff like that. So we were doing a lot of shows, five in a week sometimes, but still – we were primarily out of this little building. The cameras were always set up. The equipment's always set up. You just push the buttons, right? So it was easy.
Right, exactly.
Relatively. And the expenses were hundreds, not thousands. I couldn't pay thousands. I'm not an idiot. But I could kick a product out the door because I was uniquely trained. That was my skill. That was my superpower, as Mike Posey likes to call them. And so accordingly, I would just, you know, help. And I teach people TV, and what the industry has become is devoted on how you play a camera. You know, if
right.
you can't do that, if you're all about just the pyrotechnics without knowing how to sell it, the only reason Sammy Guevara got over is not the things he did to potentially hurt himself, but it's the fact that he comes up and he finds a camera with his cocky little face. That's what's
right.
really getting him over. The spots certainly don't hurt, but the stuff after and the stuff before.
Right.
Why do I
right.
do I want to see it? You know, because otherwise there's a bunch of people that can jump around and try to kill themselves. I mean, it's not really. I told Jack Evans that years ago, you know, because he was trying to do stunts at one point wearing like a bodysuit of some and I think you'll kill yourself. You know, don't be an idiot. You're talented as crap. Just don't do that. You know, figure out. And AJ had to figure it out. Everybody I've, you know, you've got to figure out what you can do. But that's the skill I figured out is, okay, I can keep TV going, and I have one way or another to this day. I've been involved in TV consecutively since 1993. I've always had a TV show on the air I've been associated with every year and sometimes multiple shows. So that's been my gimmick, and then the second gimmick was I realized that I can tell if I think, you know, if somebody's a potential star. And I've therefore helped develop some people who I believed in, and I continue to do that.
Okay.
You know, AJ is always the easiest example because he got the farthest and went the hardest route. You know, because he went through everything – to get to the final prize and then got that, right? So not everybody, nobody's really done that ride the way that AJ did, where he came out, he turned down WCW once.
Turned down WWE
after that, took WCW, turned down WWE to go to development, and instead did TNA, stuck with TNA until we got screwed in 2013, went out after that. We put the business back together. Nobody cared that he was the most decorated champion in TNA's history. He went out, went to the Indies, went to Ring of Honor, went to New Japan, became the biggest star in wrestling on the Indies.
Mm-hmm.
Literally did that. And then we were
he wanted, I didn't agree,
but he had already gone in and had a meeting I wasn't involved in, and they was prepared along with Gallows and Kenny, they were prepared to re-sign and had more or less said they were gonna to TNA. And then TNA screwed up the negotiation by sending a contract that had nothing we had discussed in it. And it was literally Christmas Day. So I'm or Christmas Eve. So Christmas Eve, redlining a contract. And then I talk to Alan on Christmas Eve, and I go, hey, you're going to hate this. Nothing we asked for is in this, literally nothing. I mean, I said, if there was one thing we had talked about that was in there, I would tell you. And when I asked Big about it, he had simply said, "Oh, I don't read the contracts." You know, this is the guy that was in charge, of course. Alan said, blah, 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 you know, do you think I should, you know, text Triple H just to see? You know, yeah, why not? What? And then he did, and then the rest is history.
Yeah, definitely.
That's the ultimate story. But there's, you know, littler versions of that story. Matt Sydal's a story. Delirious, who books Ring of Honor, is one of mine. I've been with Chris Daniels since 2002. Frankie, most of that time. Mike Posey, rep for everybody, still does. Simultaneously, he's repping for NWA, AEW, and Impact.
Oh,
I mean, how many
Jesus
people do that?
Yeah, that's hard work. That's no sleep at all.
And within WWE, headed a ring crew for 2.5 years and did 2 WrestleManias.
Nice.
I'm developing a couple of kids now, Master and Machine, Marcus Cross and Griff Garrison. Marcus Cross, 4th degree black belt, legit master. Machine, high school wide receiver, holds county records, and in wrestling, big boy. And we've been doing a lot of Ring of Honor. They wrestled the Briscoes for the titles. Marcus just had knee surgery, so they're sort of on the shelf, but the timing's good. Because you can't do anything. But we're in the, they're in the mix at Ring of Honor, so I'm hoping they're going to get going. Good kids, talented, get over.
Nice.
People put their hands up. That's what the music says.
Yeah, I would love to have them on here one day. Hopefully we can arrange that.
Oh, just let me know anytime. They're very entertaining. They complete each other's sentences. They are a real team. Most great teams in wrestling are put together and only sort of get along, if at all. You know, some come together by kismet, and that's like the Midnight Express, where everybody loved everybody. And the Rock and Roll Express have sort of become that over time. They had fallings out in the middle for problems. But these guys are best friends. And if I was managing them individually, I would have prepared them differently and put them in different places. Griff, for example, big boy, might have been down at NXT, right?
Nice.
Marcus, littler, would probably still have been in Ring of Honor. Or he would have been, you know, like PJ, and, you know, like PJ, who I work with, who's over at Impact. Moose is somebody I work with. I work with everybody.
Nice. I was going to say, you're an agent for everybody. You are. You actually have a website. I was going to ask you at the end if you wanted to plug that in and let everybody know that you're free, that you're an agent, and you know, because I got a lot of bookers listening, you know, where they can actually book your wrestlers at.
Well, once everybody's back in the business, SBI Show Business Inc. is my corporation. SBIBookings.com is the website. I'm easy to find, though. I'm on the Facebook. I'm on the Twitter. I'm on Instagram. Don't really understand Instagram, but that's fine. Twitter still annoys me. Facebook I like. Facebook is sort of like the way I sort of like MySpace. I'm old, so MySpace came out. It was like everybody wanted their website where you could put your music, put your stuff, right? And, okay, if you want to know something about me, here's my stuff. Right?
Right, there you go, all in one thing, right. Yeah. I like Facebook.
And social media has become, I need to let you know what I'm thinking right now. And I really don't, even with the people I love the most, I really don't need to know all their thoughts. I just don't.
Definitely not, yeah. Don't need to know everybody's business.
Yeah, it's like, I really don't need a picture of your dinner. I don't.
Right. Or what you're drinking right now.
Yes, or why. It's 9
right.
in the morning.
Yeah. I couldn't sleep all night, so I'm having a cup of beer right now, or I'm having a big plate of breakfast. You know, like, okay, why?
Yeah. It's like having New Jack as a roommate. I had that.
Wow, I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
New Jack lived with me.
New Jack's one of my kids. But read note. Oh, that's a quick plug. Buy New Jack's book. I'm all over the book, and anytime I'm all over a book, it is the greatest book ever written. It should win awards, but honestly, it's a good little book. They did a good job on it, and Jack comes off well and honest, and, If you want to know anything about New Jack as a person, you know,
it's in the book.
It's, I can tell you, I know him better than almost anybody, and his book is real.
Okay. What about
but
that,
anybody that's always wondered about New Jack, check it out.
That's,
although he told me something I didn't know, because he did this impassioned speech at the end of my company, Wildside in the Ring, called me out, said really nice things, almost looked like he might have a tear going down. And
okay.
Then in the book, he ended his Wildside chapter by going, I just felt disconnected, like I really, you know, wasn't feeling the same thing. Because at the end, it got very emotional and blah, blah, blah. And what Jack forgot, and it's just fun to look at the book, because the way my mind went to it is, okay, that is the way you ended up, Jack, but you started it. You literally came out, grabbed the mic, brought me out, then ended up feeding to everybody else coming out. Then you did the toss at the end that ended the thing with everybody crying. And by then, you'd blown your wad, you know? So, but it's fun to read that in Jack's book, because he had never said that to me. So that was sort of cool.
Yeah, definitely. It's always fun to have that kind of thing going on. And like I said, the new Jack has been one of my favorite wrestlers since the 90s. I used to watch him back in ECW, and then I watched the Dark Side of the Ring episode, and, man, that just caught my eye a lot more, and then I'm going to end up grabbing – I got to grab that book. I haven't grabbed it, but I'm going to – I will grab
it. It's worth it.
It's worth
it. No, seriously, it's, I mean, I've been in a number of books, and there's a lot of books I've read that are very, very good. This is a really good book, and it's not a big – but it's not a big, thick, hard to read. I'm going to go, like Bret Hart's book, you really had to commit to. You had to give in to that book. It was like 500 freaking pages. But I called Bret afterward, and I told him it was freaking awesome. But I disagreed with something he had said at the end, where he was analogizing at the end that the passion for the business that he and the people in his generation brought, the sacrifice, the blah, 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 that didn't exist anymore. And I had said,
right.
I said, no, that's actually not still, it's not true. I know what you mean because, okay, the guys aren't driving down the icy road in Manitoba, you know, getting to the fourth show of the week, you know, for $50. But that kind of environment still exists. And at least with the generation I was helping bring in, you know, with AJ and I, you know, on and on, right. With Daniels, Delirious, Hernandez, Gunner, Dash Wilder, you know, blah, blah, blah. All those guys all had to go out and do the, if they wanted to make it, they all had to do that. Only a few guys have been delivered to a development area. Like Cody Rhodes walked out of wrestling in school and went to development. He never spent a minute doing an indie.
Wow. That's not to
be mean to him. That's how he, and look at how good he is. You know, he did great.
Yeah.
But he never had the experience that most guys need to go through to really have a passion for the business. The fact that he does is, I think, part of, you know, wanting to, you know, prove something to his dad in his absence.
Okay, yeah, definitely, yeah. And that goes deep. That's definitely deep. And, man, another thing I wanted to ask you is about the TNA fight between CM Punk and Teddy Hart.
Okay, I'll tell you the short version. So there was this, what was it? Oh, it was the White Trash Cafe. Okay, yeah, so Nashville Fairgrounds, if you go out the door, you take a left, you walk down a hill, and the White Trash Cafe was at the end of the hill, right at the road on the right, and that's where we went to eat in sort of in shifts, because, you know, you couldn't get everybody at the same time, so you had to pick your spot over about a two-hour period. You know, it took a good long lunch, made sure everybody had time. And and the food was all, like, it was like the opposite of healthy, you know, because this was Southern cooking. So, you know, it was high starch content.
It was
great. But anyway, that's what we all ate. I mean, or most of us ate. I think some people probably went out and tried to get healthy food, but I think most everybody else just gave in after a while because these were long days. We're just putting out, at the beginning, the TNA experience in the asylum was a real one, all for one, one for all kind of thing. You really did feel that. But anyway, so we walked down, blah, blah, blah. We all, a group of us are coming back. Sabu was with it. I don't know who else, but I was there with Sabu. We're walking back, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Sabu was coming back with us. We're walking back from eating, and
okay,
all of a sudden, we're walking up on the, it was just about, the shit was just about to happen moment where they've been blah, blah, blah. I never heard what they were talking about to any great extent. All I could tell was Punk had said something, pissed Teddy off. That's all I got. Which makes sense because it's easy for both of those things to happen, just given the personalities of both guys. So, next thing I know, fight's going on, but it isn't much of a fight because literally almost immediately, Teddy puts him over and is mounting and is punching the fuck out of him. I mean, it was very similar to a fight New Jack had with Rusty Riddle at my building where Onyx and I pulled him off and Jack looked at me and goes, thank God it was blown up. You know, it was just overwhelmingly dominant and Sabu was the first to move. Yanked Teddy off, got in the way, moved him back. Punk didn't try to do anything. He didn't do the tough guy. I'm going to jump him, you know, while you're holding him back thing. It just sort of, you know, everybody else sort of, nobody really ran over to grab Punk. I don't know why, you know. You would think somebody would come over and go, oh, Phil, are you okay? You know, but no.
You're okay, right, yeah. Most definitely.
But Punk was really never that guy. You know, I offered to help him one time just at the tapings, and it was one of those where he just looked at me, no, I do my own stuff. I go, okay, cool, bye. Nice to know you. And you know, he got along with everybody, but then if he broke up with a girl and that girl dated one of the other boys, he'd be mad at that guy. You know, it's that kind of guy.
Wow.
It is.
Yeah.
In my experience.
But
I gotta give him guts. Admittedly, he got a lot of money for it. It's like it's one of those things. Like, what would you do for a lot of money? I'd get beat up in Ultimate Fighting. You know.
Yeah, right. That's why I said he through his UFC run. You can see he ain't that type of guy.
But I mean, seriously, it's like of all the things, and at least I mean it shows a tremendous amount of balls. It also involved a lot of personality. I mean, he didn't walk it. He didn't like phone it in. So, you know, got to give a lot of respect for that kind of effort. It's not, as I'm looking at things to make a lot of money, I would have, like, done a lawsuit years ago against a corporation I worked for, you know? It would have been much simpler.
Right. Yeah, most definitely. It could have been
a
lot simpler.
Into something where, I mean, you're not the biggest guy in the room already, and he was never a body guy, right?
Definitely.
So, you know, when him getting into, you know, like you go, Bobby Lashley thinks he's getting into Ultimate Fighting. Okay. Sounds good to me. Look at him. I just saw him have chiropractic where some chiropractor, like, hammered a stake up his butt.
Oh, God.
But, you know, I literally just, you know, and I was telling my chiropractor this. I was going, do you know of a technique where somebody, like, puts a rod on your coccyx bone and hits it with a hammer? And he went,
No.
And I said,
right.
And you are an advanced kinesiologist, right? And he went, yeah. I said, so this is like super advanced.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
I don't know if you see it. That video is out there, by the way. I'm not just making this stuff up for entertainment purposes. It's out there. There's a Bobby Lashley video of him getting attacked by a chiropractor in ways you can only imagine in your bad dreams.
Oh, God. I'm going to have to check that out right after this.
Just Google Bobby Lashley, chiropractor, maybe stick up butt, don't know. I didn't go up his butt. That's wrong to say. It was a total coccyx bone thing. I know what he was doing.
Oh, no.
It just doesn't sound to me like something you want to do.
Yeah. I would hope not. Well, I wouldn't. I would hope not.
I don't know. Maybe he's got, you know, maybe he's just had a spine compression and, you know, But can you imagine just the moment prior to that hammer coming in? It's like,
No, that's what I'm saying. I couldn't imagine that. I wouldn't be able to do it.
I'm too much of a pussy to even want to consider a tattoo. You know, and any time I see a piercing, I'm going, you freaking idiot. What were you thinking? The guys that hollow their ears out, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I
don't understand. Years later, you're going to be 90 years old, and you're going to have part of your ear hanging down where your genitals now hang.
That's right. You're going to have you're going to have them, your ears hanging low. Do they wobble to the floor?
Oh, God. Yeah. There's going to be like a research. Years from now, people are going to look back and go, what was going on in those years of body painting? You know?
Right, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. But it looks like we're out of time, Mr. Burns. Maybe another day we can have another conversation, another episode. But it's been great. Like I said, I thank you for taking my invitation and coming to the show. And like I said, I would love to have your boys on here and maybe some more people on here one day with you.
Cool. Anytime. Master Machine, love to do it. Marcus Cross, Griff Garrison, look them up. They're on all the social medias. And I'm putting a lot of videos up on my YouTube. The channel's called NWA Wildside, all pushed together as one word. And then I'm on the Facebook, and you know, otherwise, look forward to coming back at some point.
No problem. We would love to have you back. But,
and I understand
that
you
like
got
said,
Sean Hernandez coming up, don't you?
Yes, I do. I was going to actually promote that.
Say hi to Hot Stuff.
I'll
leave you with this as we go, but say goodbye. When Hot Stuff debuted, he came in. Rudy Boy Gonzalez used to bring guys in from Texas all the time. We had everybody came in. Frickin' Paul London came in through Rudy initially. Lance Hoyt came in. Hot Stuff came in. The Texas Treats, we had Masada. It was just a flood of folk came in. When Hernandez came in, we did this great match, and Hernandez was getting over at the time of being the guy that flew over the top rope, big guy, right? And nobody had been doing that stuff that big. So we showcased him. He had a heck of a match. It was awesome. The whole show went great. We got done at the end, and my technical people came up and said, we have a problem. I go, what's the problem? We got no audio. And I went, what do you mean no? Literally nothing. No commentary.
Oh.
No wild
nothing.
Sounds. Nothing. It's just video. So, Hot Stuff's first appearance in Wildside, and he went on to become a Wildside champion, is he was a music video we did of all of his high spots. That was all we could do with his first appearance. So, right now he's back at Impact, and we're looking at maybe doing a contract, so that'll be good. He's one of my clients.
Oh, nice. Yeah, most definitely. Like I said, it's going to be fun to have him on, and it was great having you on, like I said. And, man, you're great. You're a great, humble person. You're awesome, and I appreciate you, man.
Coolio, you keep doing the good work yourself, and stay healthy.
Thank you. You too. Stay healthy. And
hopefully we'll
like
all be
I
back
said,
in business again
on.
Soon.
Definitely, definitely, for sure. So have a great day, and again, thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Bill Burns from NWA Power. What did you guys think of that interview? I have a few minutes left if you guys want to call in. Area code 646-668-8672. And again, he brought it up later on. This is the first dose of the Rated R Wrestling Podcast 313. Later on, 6:30, starting at 6:30, I have Lance in Hawaii confirmed. Jacob Fatu, that's a little bit iffy, but for sure, Lance in Hawaii and Hernandez. Supermax from Impact Wrestling and hopefully NWA Power soon, NWA Wildside, 6:30 p.m. This has been the Rated R Wrestling Podcast, a special edition because this guest that I had on was too big for the original show. So thanks, you guys, for tuning in. And if you didn't, catch it back on replay at Open Talk Radio through the Flash 313. So, Martez, what'd you think about that interview?
Oh, man, first of all, I'm going to say I'm proud of you, man. For real, I'm proud for you.
That was a great interview, man. And you are on your way up, man. And I could say this in Messenger, but I'm gonna say this on air, man. Like, it almost seemed like you're connected, man. You're super connected with them now, man. And it was a great interview. It was a great guest. You know, he was very informative. You know, he was very engaging. He was very in tune. Like, you guys had great chemistry. You know, he had great stories. I mean,
yes,
there's so much. There's so much I can say. I mean, I'm just happy over here for you, for your show, and for what may happen in the future. Yeah.
Most definitely. And if it wasn't for Open Talk Radio, The Flash, none of this would really be possible. And I appreciate you and Open Talk Radio, this platform, man, and for everybody that, you know, you're giving a chance to, you know, the Gorilla Position, great show, you guys. That's always 8 o'clock after the Rated R Wrestling Podcast. You got many shows on this platform that you can check out. And it's not just my show, you know what I'm saying? I want to promote the whole Open Talk Radio, The Flash, the whole platform, because it's great.
Thank you. Thank you, man. How you feel about it, man?
Man, I wasn't nervous, but that's besides Ricky Morton, I'm not trying to put nobody down, you know what I'm saying? But those are two legends, you know, that I had on my show. You know what I'm saying? And that you know, brings me a lot of happiness. You know, not downgrading nobody. I love every guest I have on my show, but these are legends is what I'm saying. You know, these are two legends that I had on my show. I love having legends on my show, but I love everybody that I bring on here. Like tonight, I'm going to have, like I said, the future Lance in Hawaii. He had three WWE tryouts. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about his WWE tryouts that he had in 2015, 2017, 2019. And we're also going to talk with Super Max. We're going to see if he can shed a little light on the little TNA Impact mashup that they got going on over there at Impact Wrestling. You know, Super Max is a super cool guy, and they've been humble, and like I said, Jacob Fatu haven't gotten to me yet, but I'm pretty sure he's going to get to me hopefully before the show starts. And I hope to talk to the MLW champion and talk about hopefully having Jacob Fatu versus Lance in Hawaii, because earlier this year I actually interviewed Lance in Hawaii on the Deathmatch Wrestling Podcast 313 on YouTube, and he said he would like to face, out of any Samoan out there, that he would love to face MLW champion Jacob Fatu. If I have Jacob on, I'm going to ask him about that, see what he would think about that, because he's actually the longest reigning 299 plus day MLW champion. So will it take, like Ric Flair says, to be the man, you got to beat the man. Does it take a ooze to beat the ooze? I mean, who knows? Hopefully we'll get those answers.
Absolutely, man. Well, like you said, you just getting started. You got all this going on tonight. You got a action-packed show tonight, so I look forward to being here along with you and listening, tuning in.
Yeah, you know, now if you get some questions going, man, I want to have you have a couple questions for Super Max and Lance in Hawaii.
All right, I'll make sure I have one or two just in case. All right.
All right, man. I appreciate you. You know, I always got to have you on there, but ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to hold any more time because I got a couple hours to go before I have to be back on the air. This has been the Southwest Texan with a special edition of the Rated R Wrestling Podcast that featured Bill Barnes. I pronounced it wrong, but please tune in at 6:30 for the Rated R Wrestling Podcast one more time. Thank you, guys. Thank you.